During the pandemic of COVID-19, the health and fitness industry took a beating to the point where so many places didn't survive. Gyms, CrossFit boxes, yoga studios, so many took a royal beating and were not able to continue to serve their customers the way that they did before. Some shifted to online versions of themselves, others just didn't make it completely. But now that we've kind of post-COVID, what is the evolution now for gyms? Where is this going? Do they still think about memberships? Are people still going to gyms? And how exactly is artificial intelligence going to disrupt the health and fitness industry? That is the exact conversation that I got to have today with Duncan Forbes. Duncan is a SUNY Cortland graduate, my alma mater. And on top of it, he's also a manager at Lifetime Fitness. He's seen so many of the changes and the pivots that were required during the COVID-19 pandemic and has some amazing insight as to what the evolution of gym memberships, gyms, and even how AI is going to affect things going forward that I think you will find fascinating. I hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. So you guys ready? 3, 2, 1, let's go. Hey everyone, what's going on? I'm Mike Fancher and welcome to this episode of the MindFit Method Podcast. I'm stoked that you're back with us today and I think you're going to love my conversation with Duncan Forbes. So without ado, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce you to Duncan. All right. So Duncan, thank you so much today for being on the podcast. I am so excited to have you here. It's so cool. I've been able to connect now with so many different SUNY Cortland graduates over the last several weeks, and you are one as well. When did you graduate from Cortland?
So I graduated in 2011.
2011? All right. Yes. You were a little bit after me. I had about 10 plus years on you a little bit. But let me ask, because like, was there a lesson or a story or something that really resonated, that originated at Cortland, that's kind of resonated throughout your life since then?
A story specifically, I would actually say the connections that I made for recreational sports. I played rugby in college and I majored in kinesiology. And my first job was actually through somebody that I played rugby with.
Wow.
And I didn't know that, one, it's a small world, right? But two, how important it is to build relationships in college, even though most of us, you know, we kind of live it up in college. But those 4 years, if you do it correctly, can be utilized for the rest of your life in terms of the connections that you make in your industry and everything.
Totally, totally. It's been fascinating even for me now. I mean, I'm still friends with, you know, some people that I went to school with, but it's still fascinating now reaching out to people who did graduate, and with my son being a student at Cortland now, just the amazing connections. You have no idea. I know that, what is it? There's 6 ways of separation from everybody. When it comes to SUNY Cortland, I think that number is actually less, because it seems like everybody knows somebody or they themselves went to SUNY Cortland, which is...
Small world, very small world.
Absolutely. Share a little bit of your journey, because you know, 2011, you're graduating, your kinesiology major when you're in college. What kind of led to your journey? What was your journey in becoming now as a manager in a Lifetime Fitness? And what kind of inspired you to pursue that career path?
Yeah. So after SUNY Cortland, I wanted to be a strength and conditioning coach for professional athletes. But usually in the Northeast, there's not as many schools being created as there are a lot of graduates graduating, right? I think there was like, I read somewhere that over 200,000 graduates happen every year for strength and conditioning, but only about like 40,000 schools are being created every year. So I had to make a choice after college, whether I either stay in the Northeast, be around my family and my friends, or move out Midwest where more of the opportunity was, and have a certain lifestyle of waking up at like 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning, train certain athletes, and then do my thing. One, I wasn't really a morning person. Two, I grew up in a very small high school. There was only about like 125 people in my high school. Everybody knew each other. And I liked that environment. I was very close with my friends. So I started looking for jobs around New York. And it was tough. And the reason why it was tough is because, you know, around the tri-state area, which is where I'm from, a lot of schools already have either strength and conditioning coaches, or, you know, some schools just didn't have the funding for strength and conditioning, right? So either for high schools or for college. I was also the type of person I am when I was doing research on corporate companies, you know, on Equinox and New York Sports Club and so forth. I went to glassdoor.com and I wanted to see what the culture was like, what the environment was like. And the only thing that I basically heard was that it's not the best place to be, right? So I got a little bit nervous, but I was like, I was kind of running out of time because I was doing like three jobs when I, before I actually applied to Lifetime. I was working at a restaurant. I was a physical therapy aide and I was working at House of Sports in Ardsley, which is just, you know, I would say kind of a Chuck E. Cheese version of strength and conditioning. There'd be about 20 people, 20 kids in one class, and we would teach fundamentals. But when there's 20 kids in one class and they're ages between like 11 to 15, the type of value that you provide is not the value that you want. And you're almost kind of turning into a babysitter. A great stepping stone, an absolutely great stepping stone. But I couldn't just, I had to think of something fast, right? So then what, there was a Lifetime that was actually opening up about 10, 15 minutes away from my home. And Lifetime is a Minnesota-based company. And I'm not, I didn't really hear much of it, but it is kind of like at the same luxurious level as Equinox. And I didn't really get that much research from about Lifetime. So I decided to take a chance and I actually went to the, there was a trailer outside of the building that was being made. And I actually went into the trailer and I brought my resume in, and I'll never forget. But as I came in, my my future employer was like, "Oh, hey, Duncan, I was just looking at your resume." So that was like, you know, a little bit, I don't know, spiritual, like kind of weird or something like that too. And the energy that she provided to me made me trust her and not necessarily trust whatever I was reading on the internet, you know? So that's how everything got started, because I made the effort to go to, you know, a place and make sure that they saw my resume, but also see who I am as a person, you know?
Absolutely. There's three things there that you said that really resonated with me. The first was that when you got out of school, you were a PT tech. And that was my first job when I graduated in exercise physiology out of Cortland as well. So we definitely have a connection there. Yeah. And it didn't take me too long. I remember walking into my first job and, you know, I had submitted my resume and I had just come off a really serious surgery. So 3 days after college graduation, 22 years old, I had a total hip replacement that was done. When I was 17, I had broken the ball right off my femur and developed something after 5 years called avascular necrosis. Needed to have a complete total hip replacement. Youngest hip that was ever done at the time in New Jersey. And so I come off surgery. I'm ready to go at this point. And I, you know, apply for a bunch of different positions. I get an interview for this job as a PT tech. And I remember going in, the guy loved me. I was like, great, I have the job. He's like, all right, so what are you looking to make? And yeah. I remember saying, well, you know, I'm probably looking for somewhere around $20 to $30 an hour. And he looked at me and he goes, oh, okay, well, this job's 11. I'm like, 11? And I'll never forget, you know, I graduated so naive. I truly did. But I remember saying to him, oh, I'm sorry, but I have a college degree.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And he goes, that's awesome. And it is a requirement for the job. And we pay $11 an hour. And I remember thinking, wow, I did not research this nearly as well as I thought I did. You know, I had no intention really of even going to college. My initial world was I was signed up to go in the military. My dad worked in law enforcement. I wanted to be a police officer. And I was all signed up to be a military police in the Army. And then I broke my leg. And it wasn't until February of my senior year of high school that all of a sudden the recruiter at a recruiting event at my high school one day, who I'd been working with for months and months, he was kind of avoiding me. And he finally walked up to me and he's like, hey, he's like, how you doing? I'm like, good. I'm like, man, I'm all ready to go. And he's like, yeah, the only thing is all that hardware that's in your leg, you got to get all that out. When I first had the accident, I had a plate, a pin, and screws put in my hip. And I was like, oh, no, that's part of me now. Like, I can't do that. Yeah. I'll never forget, he looked me dead in the face. And he's like, well, thanks, but no thanks.
Oh, man.
I had no plan B. Like, that was the plan. And I remember my dad didn't even really give me any time. And this was, it was a tough love moment. And looking back, it was the best thing he could have done. Yeah. But, you know, I went home. I said, I can't go in the military. And he kind of took it in for a second. He didn't really say a whole lot. And then the next day, I remember him saying to me, so what's the plan?
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, I don't have a plan. He's like, you better come up with one.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, you got to figure out your path. And, you know, my dad was a bodybuilder. I grew up with Arnold Schwarzenegger and everybody else on my walls from when I was, you know, a young kid. And I was like, well, I love fitness. I love training. You know, that was a huge part of my life. So that was the next step. But I remember looking and seeing, oh, you know, if you go to a gym and you do personal training, you pay $50 an hour. So $50 an hour isn't bad. Not realizing that you make 10, the gym makes 40.
Yeah, I was like, okay.
Did not look that deep, my own bad on that. But so I definitely had that PT tech connection. And something else that you said was Lifetime being housed or originating in Minnesota. So a company that I worked for many years ago, their corporate offices were in Minnesota. And I remember having to go out for a kind of a week for a business trip. And I remember saying, you know, I got to find a gym while I'm out here. I'm going to go crazy. And everyone's like, oh, you should go to Lifetime. So I was used at the time to these tiny little gyms where I had always worked out and what was around me. I remember driving up to this gigantic building, big, like rectangular building, Lifetime Fitness right on the top. Yeah. I remember walking in and be like, I'm in heaven. Like, this is amazing. And just the whole experience, I had never seen smoothie bars and things that just didn't exist at the time in other places. I felt like they were so far ahead of the curve at that time. So that was really cool. And honestly, that was 1 week of fantastic workouts. So definitely, you have a, although I live in New Jersey and there's no Lifetime Fitnesses anywhere near me, I am definitely a fan of Lifetime Fitness because
it's a very small world, you know, that they're expanding. I'll tell you that they are expanding.
It was really cool. But you also talked about like the connection and the taking the time to go to that trailer that day, hand in your resume, see what it was really about. That's something that I think so many college graduates are missing today because we live in a world behind computers, behind keyboards, behind everyone's thumbs going like this all day long. And we get so used to, oh, I'm going to apply for a job. And we click apply on that application. And then the expectation is that everyone's going to cater to us at that point. And they don't. And you taking that step is something that every college graduate today really needs to take to be able to take that initiative, push forward. Nothing's going to land in your lap. And you weren't waiting for it to land in your lap. You went after it. So kudos to you. That was awesome.
Thank you.
Very cool. But let me ask, because you've been in the fitness world now for a while.
Yeah.
And the fitness world, the whole fitness industry has kind of evolved significantly over the past decade plus. And I'm not even talking about COVID. We'll get to COVID in a little bit. But even over the last decade plus, how have you seen some of the trends in fitness and even just in wellness kind of change since you started in the industry?
Yeah. So when you go to college to study kinesiology, which is what I studied, it was a lot about the body and a little bit about nutrition. And then through your journey, what you're going to realize is actually a lot deeper than that. So I'm also precision nutrition certified by this guy named Dr. John Berardi. And what I've actually learned is that it's not just the personal training that's going to actually change someone else's life. It's actually understanding the methodology of deep health, right? Helping someone understand what their existential, you know, purpose is, you know, from a very emotional level too. So in terms of the science will always change. The things that we're probably talking about right now will probably be changed within 5 years. That's just how, you know, health is, but that's a wonderful thing about it too. But what you'll also see too is that people are always trying to reinvent the wheel with certain exercises. What is the best squat? try it out this way. What is the best push exercise? Try it out this way. And I guess what has really changed is how consumers that are not in the fitness industry is absorbing this information. More than ever, there's a lot more marketing through social media and all of these electronic platforms that it's also getting a little bit confusing for the consumer. But at the same time, the consumer will want that because at a click of a button, they're already going to technically find a solution or think that they found a solution to their goals. So that is why coaching as a strength and conditioning coach or personal trainer or even a nutrition coach is more important than ever, especially when you got artificial intelligence that's now already trying, right, to take over some of our jobs too. So you, that is just only a tip of the iceberg of what I see changing with the fitness industry.
Absolutely. I could not agree more. Several things that you just hit on. If you could probably see my face lighting up. And I was like, oh my gosh, yes. So one of the things is that people today, especially because of social media, and I published a book this year called The Dopamine Intervention, which was literally about how social media and technology is in many ways, it's absolutely affected our dopamine production in our brain. But more than anything, it's put us on a nasty hamster wheel of motivation. Mm. So we've actually become motivated to get, we have to get motivated to be motivated, which turns us into motivated procrastinators. So we have all these people that are like, oh my gosh, this is what I want to do. They watch a couple David Goggins videos and they're like, all right, I'm going to go do this. And then they're like, you know what though? This video actually says to do this. And then they swipe one more time and this video says to do this. We've become obsessed in a way with finding, well, I can't start unless it's perfect. And not realizing that if they just start in as imperfect a program as they possibly could do, they're going to have results. But without any consistency, without starting, they're not going to get anywhere.
Of course, and absolutely.
Today, we're faced with, you know, we have information at our fingertips today that we've never had in life. I mean, when I went to school, it wasn't that long ago when you still had to go to a library, you still had to do searches on Google to be able to even find something. Even if we just go back to Google. Now, because of algorithms, because you start searching fitness or nutrition or anything, you get blasted with all this information and it's created, I call it knowledge overload. So we're to a point now where we've become so obsessed with learning about what we possibly should do that we don't act.
There you go. Absolutely.
It's a horrible, horrible thing.
There you go.
I interviewed who was also a rugby player at Cortland, Rob Tracy. He was my interview. He'll be this Thursday's podcast episode.
Tell him I said hi. He's going to probably start cracking up. Okay.
That's so funny. See, small world. That's what I'm talking about. But we had a great conversation and he brought up an interesting point. I've never heard it said this way before. When you think about what you consume, right? We think about nutrition. We consume in macros, micros, however you look at it, calories, fat, whatever. His consumption viewpoint is really we consume nutrition and we consume digital media. Both are a level of consumption. And being able to manage and control your consumption of both worlds will definitely lead you in the right direction, which you tied into exactly the same. And coaching is so important. Just the accountability portion of coaching is huge.
When I say coaching too, a lot of people don't realize, but let's say that you are a consumer and you're looking for some change. Personal trainers, registered dietitians, and nutrition coaches, we're actually on the same playing field as doctors, chiropractors, and physical therapists. We're all on the same end of the spectrum, right, of healthcare. But one side of the spectrum is treatment care, and one on the other side of the spectrum is preventative care. But as a human, the majority of the time, we only look for help when we're either on desperation. So there's two ways that humans change, either between inspiration or desperation. But most of the time, human beings wait till they get to the point of disease or wait till they have some sort of incident where all of a sudden they have to make a change. So as a coach, how are you able to help a client of yours be inspired throughout the entire time to keep on having a proactive approach to health rather than a reactive approach to health?
100%. My wife is actually a clinical registered dietitian.
Awesome.
Works in ICUs, you know, all the time on that reactive side. And we will talk all the time because, you know, people, and this is certainly not a dig about against doctors at all, but 99% of doctors do not understand nutrition. Mm-hmm. And it's because they haven't had to. Right? They're worrying about the acute situation that's going on with a patient at that time. And even from the fitness and exercise standpoint, they often have no knowledge base because their training in school, whether it was their residency, their fellowship, whatever it is, doesn't dive into that world. And fitness and exercise is it is proactive, but people today are so used to viewing it as, I need to go on a diet. I need to start a 12-week fitness program, all of these things. And there's always this indication that what they're changing is temporary. And that's, I think, the most frustrating thing in this industry is that it doesn't have to be temporary. And when you create, if you go from 1 to 10 on your nutrition spot, you're currently at a 1, right? And what you're eating, what you're consuming, it's really not good. And tomorrow you're going to a 10, your probability of staying at that 10 is so little because you're not making the small adjusted habits and micro habits that you need to make over time. It's crazy. You know, you said something that I haven't really touched on with anybody yet, but it is going to play a huge role. And I work in healthcare when I'm not in the MindFit world. You talked about AI because I don't think anyone has any idea just how much AI is going to change things, not 10 years down the road, but about 36 months from now. I believe there's going to be massive changes, whether it's in healthcare. I know there are already hospital systems looking to see, could AI replace their emergency room physicians, replace their hospitalists? Talk to me a little bit about your thoughts of AI in the fitness and wellness space, above and beyond just ChatGPT, you know, writing out a workout for you for 10 weeks. What are your thoughts?
Of course. Well, a couple of years ago when the mirror came out, right, and Lululemon actually bought the mirror, was when I started to realize that technology is really starting to come into the fitness industry. You literally have something convenient at home for consumer, right? Any company that finds a way to help someone solve a problem quicker and more affordable will sell like crazy. And that's what's happening with like Mirror right now, right?
Yep.
But since I'm a nerd and I follow the stock market at the same time, and I suggest everybody try to do that, because if you want to see where the money's going, you want to see which companies are actually getting the most amount of money out of consumers. Yep. But with that being said, there was a kind of call with the Lululemon, you know, company that was actually saying that they lost money investing in Mirror, which was really interesting too, because, and we'll talk about the pandemic, but there was a time where at the end of the day, people were working out at home, Mirror would make sense. But now since things are going to a different direction, people are coming back to the gym and so forth, that type of technology is not necessarily as impactful as what it used to be. Now come to artificial intelligence, right? The interesting thing about artificial intelligence is that it really is just an algorithm at the end of the day, right?
Yep.
But we all act on algorithms, you know, believe it or not, right? But with that algorithm, what happens is that when someone is actually looking to ask for a nutrition program and or somebody's asking for a training program, they can get it. But what people don't realize is that the environment that a human is in will consistently change throughout the entire program. There might be a day where the weather is not good and it's going to have the effect on you not even showing up. There's going to be a time where, you know, maybe the place at Wegmans doesn't necessarily have the food that you're trying to buy and so forth like that. So are the artificial intelligence programs going to be there as a coach to kind of walk through somebody that's going through these challenges, through these limitations? And to be honest, I actually think that might happen sooner than later. There's already movies about that that's basically happening with that too. But the books that I've been reading, for example, the book by Dr. John Berardi, Changemaker, was basically saying in the beginning that the turnover rate for personal trainers every year is about 40%. So if you had 10 trainers on your staff, technically 4 trainers at the end of the year are just going to get out of the industry. Now you got artificial intelligence coming in. Like, as a leader for me, what can I do even better to make sure that the people on my team stay in this field as a career? You know, and one thing that the company's now starting to battle with is what services and people can we provide to anybody that walks in through our doors that's going to be totally different than the artificial intelligence that's being out there right now. Right now, personal trainers and anybody in the preventative care has to be more human than ever to make sure that you have a long, sustainable relationship with your clients.
Agreed. I spoke to a hospital about 3 weeks ago, and we were talking about implementing AI in the physician world.
Yep.
And right now, AI is limited based on inputs and outputs. Yep. So, right now, and I'll use ChatGPT as an example because it's the one that everybody knows. Yep. In order to really, if you're going to stay on ChatGPT 3.5, you have to type in your inputs and it's going to essentially type out your output back to you.
Yep.
What's going to change rapidly, I think, over the next 12 to 24 months is how the inputs and outputs occur. So yeah. We're already seeing this with plugins on ChatGPT-4, but what's going to change is when you can start talking to your computer instead of typing and it's spitting everything back at you, there's your inputs and outputs.
Yeah.
That's where that part's going to change. Now, you add the knowledge base, and again, from a physician standpoint, if you go into a doctor's office or even you do a telemedicine visit with a doctor, which happened a lot during COVID, you're going to explain the symptoms to them. And based on what you tell them, they are going to spit back a diagnosis and a treatment plan for you.
Yep. So yep.
What's going to be fascinating is that in the next 24 months, I firmly believe that we are going to have situations where new medical companies come up that when you do your telemedicine call, because the inputs and the outputs will be so advanced.
Oh, yeah.
Along with a visual, so I'm looking right at you right now on a Zoom screen, but it's going to get to the point where I'm not going to be able to tell if you are you or if you are AI.
Oh, yeah. That's the scary part. Absolutely.
That's where we're going. And I don't think there's any industry that is protected from that. So to your company's point, how are they going to provide, you know, a service essentially that can do more than what AI can do?
Yep, absolutely. But
there is a kicker, and there is, and this is the part that, you know, you can't outsource exercise. You just can't do it. As much as I'd love, or some people would love to hire someone to do their exercise for them and then they reap the results, it's never going to happen. So exactly. In the end, I think having AI or something on a computer screen engaging with you, yes, it can spit you out the best programs, the best nutritional program, the best workout, all of those things. But you can only mimic the human connection so much. Mm-hmm. And that human connection is what is going to protect certain people in certain industries.
Yep.
It's just my opinion, but it's going to protect those people, because there's still going to be times where you want to talk to a real person that feels, that has empathy, that does the things that perhaps at this point or even in the next 24 to 36 months, AI is not going to be able to pull off yet.
Yeah, someone that gets it. Some of that's like real. Yeah, absolutely. And exactly. Coming from like a professional standpoint, yeah, that totally makes sense. But like at the same time, we still do have to see through the eyes of consumer. And if they can find something that's either easier, that's cost more efficient, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they did do it. And not only is artificial intelligence growing, but I think everybody has reading about Ozempic, right?
Oh, yes.
Like weight loss thing. So not only is artificial intelligence going to make information a lot more personalized, you also have the pharmaceutical drug companies that's now starting to make it easier for people just to take a pill and see results. Because literally 24 hours before this podcast, one of our members was telling me that her friend that used to come to our gym is no longer coming to the gym anymore because she took a pill. I don't know whether it was Ozempic or not, right? And she doesn't either. But the fact that she just saw results, doesn't need a gym membership anymore, is wild, is absolutely wild. And that's what all fitness professionals that are trying to graduate college, they have to think a step ahead. Yep. Because what I've learned in this industry or any industry, you can do 10 things better than somebody else in your industry and then get a incremental advantage, like 10 times of an incremental advantage. But if you do something in your industry that nobody has ever done before, then you get a geometrical advantage. So who are those going to be those people that kind of start thinking outside of the box, right?
Agreed. You know, it's interesting because Ozempic is everywhere right now. What started out as a diabetes drug to really help that world has now turned into, it's almost like the opioid situation, I feel like, where everyone is being prescribed this stuff. And yeah, that's great. In the first X number of days, you lose 15 pounds on average, whatever it is. But there's a couple things that I think the fitness industry especially is going to have to start shifting on. Mm-hmm. Because we live in an instant gratification world today, right? We want to be able to go on our phone, order something from Amazon. Sometimes it's there the next day. God, I ordered something from Amazon the other day. It was there in like my house in 3 hours. I'm like, how's that even possible? I just clicked the button 3 hours ago. People live in the DoorDash, the Instacart world, whether it's their groceries, their fast food, whatever it is. So even Ozempic, while it is going to decrease people's body weight, what I think a lot of the studies now are showing is that because of the way it causes your body to metabolize protein, we're going to see a lot of muscle wasting that winds up going
on
as well.
I definitely heard that too. Yep.
So if we start shifting, now obviously I'm a huge proponent of using fitness to enhance neurological function. That's the whole basis of MindFit. When I started MindFit, I did it specifically for kids age 5 through 11.
Awesome.
And awesome. I would do 8 to 14 minutes of high intensity exercise to then enhance and prime their brain for learning to then go into the STEM world, science, technology, engineering, and math. So I would have 5-year-old students homeschooled, could not read, do 8 to 14 minutes of exercise, and from there, go in and start coding. They couldn't read, but they could code, right? It was unbelievable, the effects, and it had incredible effects on children with ADD, ADHD, on the autism spectrum, people that were great athletes, people that were computer nerds, like however you wanted to go into it, it worked for everyone. And it's no different for adults. So if we move away from As we move away from anything that is delayed gratification, which is what fitness is, right? When it comes to your body, fitness is delayed gratification, unless you work out for your mind. So as soon as you initiate a workout program, your brain releases neurotransmitters, neurofactors, neurochemicals that instantly boost your mood, your serotonin, your dopamine, your norepinephrine, all of those things. So what Ozempic and even AI can't do is to boost those levels so that now when you go to the gym, if you just go to the gym because you want your mind to feel better, now you know what your extraneous goals are, right? So if you want to go in to be a bodybuilder, right? Bodybuilding, same thing. Yeah, you could take steroids, you can become a bodybuilder so much faster, you grow much, so much faster. But if you go in with the overall idea of I'm going to go in and work out for my mind so that I can deal with my stress, I can enhance my productivity, I can be more effective at work and do all those things, and then view the effects of the on the body of the exercise that you do as a byproduct, you suddenly get instant gratification when you work out.
Yep.
It's an amazing thing. So I think
absolutely.
I think if we start, I think we're going to see people shift more and more in that direction, because look, when someone wants to lose 20 pounds, is it easier to take a pill? Yes. That's why the supplement industry is at this point, it has to be a multi-trillion dollar industry.
Yep.
And the funny thing is that most people buy these supplements and they never use them. They take them for 3 or 4 days. They spend a lot of money on them. And they're like, ugh, I didn't feel anything from it. You're not going to in three or four days. And maybe never, depending on what the supplement is. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see how do we compete in a world where knowledge is everywhere.
Yeah. Right?
There's almost no benefit to knowledge today, because if you're not applying it, there's no benefit to knowledge. And we have such a craving and a hunger for knowledge that we're not taking the time to actually apply it. David Goggins said it great in one of his interviews. He's like, it's going to be really easy to be great in this world because everybody else is so soft. They don't want to put the work in. And that's what I said before. You can't outsource exercise.
You just can't.
If people start focusing on what is the instant gratification that I get from exercise, and then what are the long-term benefits that I get from exercise, I think it's going to be an interesting pivot shift kind of in the fitness world, which based upon where everyone's mental health is today, which it's a really difficult world today, right?
And of course, absolutely.
The cell phones and everything else are a huge cause of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
It's going to be fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. And you said, you're right. In a world of too much information, we are starving for wisdom.
Yes.
At the same time, you know, that's technically where we're at in our life. Everything's too available too.
Yep. Well, there's also something, I did a podcast episode a couple of weeks ago about this. It's called My Side Bias. So my side bias is when I believe X, and maybe you believe Y, but when I go to research my X, the way that the algorithms work, if I type in, and I think the example I used in the podcast was, you know, there's a lot of people that still believe the world is flat, right?
Yeah.
So if you believe the world is flat, the first thing you do is you join a Facebook group of all people that believe the world is flat. So now all the people that are around you believe the same things that you do. Now it just gives you self-validation of how you feel.
Absolutely.
And then when you go on the internet, you type in evidence that the world is flat, right? And then you're going to get a bunch of studies that come up that show you the world is flat. So now anytime they are going to have a conversation or discussion about this, they start citing research that supports what they say. If they Googled differently and said comparison theories of the way the world is flat versus the world is round, now you're going to have a much broader spectrum of information. But we've narrowed our ability to get the most perfect knowledge for a specific topic, whether it is true or whether it is not, I'm not saying, but it's fascinating. And that's what's going to happen in fitness. So that's why people are like, no. My friend does this other exercise or this other diet and it works so good. So Duncan, what you're telling me is wrong. And you're like, and I see it in the healthcare world. You know, we joke in the healthcare world all the time that everyone has their MD because they went to WebMD and they now know more than any doctor out there because they saw that they should be diagnosed with X.
Yeah, it is so crazy, like the way that you have put that. So maybe the next question is, are our consumers going to be asking better questions to find their answers? You know, and it has to now with the healthcare world, you know, it is a client to a doctor or trainer relationship. Yep. With all fitness professionals, the truth is we're only as good as our clients.
Yes.
Right. If someone's going to, I love it when someone comes into our fitness facility and they're just like, give me the best trainer. right? And I kind of like, I'm almost a little bit heartbroken because every trainer is excellent, right? If someone actually follows, you know, what their trainer is trying to say, right? Yep. So, you know, one of the hardest answers that we have to give to our members, to our consumers, or anybody that's thinking about making some change is when they ask, is this going to be the right way? The majority of the time, I usually say, it depends. And it, nobody wants to hear that answer, but it is so true though, right? So patience is such a virtue, right? And just setting up real expectations, you know, and realizations to that member in a short period of time is going to dictate, you know, their success, but their learning experience throughout this journey. Every individual person is going to be totally different. But you're right. In a world of instant gratification of getting not only food to your front door within 3 hours, but also getting a date within 3 hours at the same time too. So when all of these things in your life, you get it just like that, at the snap of the finger, and then they can't get their health in the snap of a finger, it gets frustrating.
It does. And you nailed a really good point in that you talked about consumers asking better questions. Yeah. I think one of the keys additionally is going to be, are the fitness professionals asking better questions? And here's what I mean by that.
Ah, right. Yeah, right.
So if you put someone on a 21-day meal plan, right? And at the end of the 21 days, you have a conversation with the client, they're not making the results, they're not making the reductions or the gains or whatever they're looking for in those 21 days. And you ask the question, all right, did you follow the 21-day meal plan? And their answer is, yeah, almost the entire time. Okay, so now you have very little ground to stand on for, okay, is what I gave them working or not? If you rephrase a question, and this is the answers today that we need are all about asking better questions. If you rephrase the question instead to be able to say, what percentage of the time did you eat exactly what was in the meal plan and nothing else?
Yep.
Now it's not, did you follow the 21-day meal plan? They followed it. Did you exact what percentage? And then they're gonna be like, 50% of the time. Okay. It's a much different conversation at that point. Yeah. And it allows the conversation to go forward for them to realize where they went wrong.
Of course. Right. Yeah.
I remember even in my own experience when I trained for many years, I trained clients. Yeah. And I remember having a great conversation one day with someone who total body weight was probably about 450 pounds. And when you'd have a conversation with them about what they ate, the first time we did that, I, as a young fitness professional at the time, didn't know how to structure my questions correctly. Yep. And I remember saying, okay, let's kind of go over what do you eat every day? Mm-hmm. So the first mistake I made was I said, what do you usually eat for breakfast? And they told me, and it was some oatmeal, some fruit, and a glass of orange juice. Yeah. I was like, okay, great. And I said, and what do you eat for lunch? And they answered, they have a sandwich and a salad. Okay. Yep. What do you eat for dinner? And they'd answer that. And everything that they responded with was an appropriate meal plan. But, And again, we know, everyone knows, in order to maintain a body weight of 450 pounds, you have to have so many calories per day in order just to maintain that body weight.
Yeah. Yep.
And I do remember saying, okay, and do you ever have any snacks at night? And, you know, they answered that, you know, sometimes they have, you know, some chocolate cake or something like that. Something. And I remember the first time that ever happened to me, I was so offended because I felt like they were lying to me. What I realized is I wasn't asking the right question.
Yeah.
So I went back to that same person. It was about a week later. And I said, hey, I just want to re-review everything we're going through. And I had the same question. I said, what do you eat for breakfast? They said it. And I said, okay. Oh, I missed something. What do you usually eat before breakfast?
Yep.
And I got a very different answer. Oh, well, before breakfast, many times I actually eat a box of Entenmann donuts. And this was a person who really wanted to move forward. They did not want to be in the situation that they were. They wanted to make progress. I, as the fitness professional, didn't ask the right question. After I got what was, you know, what did they have for breakfast, I got a little bit more specific. Okay, so you have oatmeal. How much oatmeal are we doing? Because I just assumed, again, as a young professional, they're having a serving of oatmeal. They're having four servings of oatmeal. And a glass of orange juice was actually a carton of orange juice. And you went through that whole process. What do you eat in between breakfast and lunch? What do you eat in between lunch and dinner? And then you got a true picture that then everything made sense. They weren't lying. They answered the questions exactly as I asked them. Mm-hmm. So it was a different, you know, a different approach. So I think for us, even for those that love ChatGPT today, ChatGPT is only as good as the questions and the prompts that you send it.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, it's not. So that's very, very interesting. And, you know, mindset from a, even from a client standpoint, their mindset, it plays a crucial role in whether or not they are or are not going to achieve their fitness goals.
Yeah.
Do you have any strategies that you found effective over the years that really, that are helpful for individuals to develop that positive and resilient mindset? You noted it before when you said you're going to have days where it's not perfect. You're not going to be able to do what you want. You wake up late, your baby's sick, whatever it is. Do you have any strategies for people to be able to work their way through that resilient part of their fitness journey?
Right. So a couple of things I like to start off with telling my clients, right? One is, don't judge your own success by somebody else's ruler. And the reason why is that in a world of social media, it is so easy to compare yourself to other people's lifestyle, but also other people's progress at the end of the day, right? Second off, the idea is not to be the next, you know, model. The idea is not to be the next, you know, the next somebody else. It's to be a better version of you, as simple as that sounds. And the third thing is, I would say, don't try to be the perfect human. Try to be perfect at being human. And what that technically means is, it's okay to have to go from side to side. It's okay to have ups and downs. You can fall back, fall down the ground six times, but to get back up, let it be seven times, right? You know, falling down could be an accident, but staying down could be a choice. And that's why, as a, you know, a nutrition coach or personal trainer, those are some ways, you know, and then it could be into certain tactics too, you know. But if somebody really wanted to figure out what was going on with their lifestyle, instead of asking yourself, where do you want to go from here, right? Ask yourself, how did you get here in the first place? So in order to fix a problem, you need to identify it. So you would need to have some type of diary, whether it's a food journal or whether it's an exercise journal. Have it in paper. And the more you write it in paper, the more that you can reveal to yourself what exactly is going on. And two, time is one of the biggest limiting factors for everybody, whether you are a professional, whether you are looking to making some change. But what a lot of people don't realize is all of us, we're on the same playing field. We all have 24 hours in a day, right? So as long as we kind of understand that, then we can actually make a schedule and or prioritize what should mean more to us. What should we take away to benefit more of what we need to do?
Absolutely. 100% agree.
There's like so many other things I could technically say, but from like a mindset, like from a mindset perspective, right? Like there is a difference between the growth mindset and a fixed mindset, you know? And a growth mindset, you know, if you are only interested in making changes, you're going to find excuses. But if you're committed, you're going to be finding solutions. And that's why the process of change for a client really depends on what you said before, the type of questions that you're asking throughout your training sessions, in text messages and emails too. You know, there's imaginary questions, there's open-ended questions. Enough with the questions at the doctor's office is like, do you feel pain? Yes or no? Like, do you eat a lot? Yes or no? Like these closed-ended questions won't necessarily reveal the root of the problem.
Agreed. Agreed. Very well said.
Yep.
You know, building a fitness community can be very motivating for clients, for staff, just for individuals in general. It's also very empowering. Yeah. I watched during COVID where, and you kind of touched on it before, where Tonal, Mirror, these companies that were building a bit of a virtual, in a way, community. I've watched Beachbody, I've watched Peloton, all try to create virtual communities. Peloton's an interesting case study right now because 2 years ago, they could not grow. They could not keep up with their demand. It was so bad.
Yeah.
And now I know every time I log on to Facebook, there's 15 Peloton bikes that are for sale in Facebook Marketplace just in my local 10-mile radius area, and they just keep adding. So what do you think? You know, people tried really hard to be able to get that community in the virtual world. And I do think that there's a value to it. And I think it can be very good. In the actual physical gym space, what do you think gyms are doing to really try to focus on that community standpoint to empower people to reach their goals?
I love it. From a group standpoint, there should definitely be some sort of events or competition to bring people together. From an individual standpoint, there has to be some type of recognition that not only does the member get from a staff perspective, but once the staff recognizes that member, then there might be some ways to get the rest of the members to see what that individual member accomplished at the same time. Energy grows where energy flows at the end of the day, right? So if people are trying to build a community, those are two great ways to do it. Group events, you know, group competitions, and then any individual progress, right? Exemplify it, toot your horn with it as much as you can, and let other people believe that it is possible. Because everybody that has problems, it's actually not their problem. It's a problem that is not necessarily as unique as somebody else's. Time is everybody's problem, right? Injuries is everybody's problem. And what happens is that when people take these problems too personally, they feel like it's almost themselves that's holding them back. And if it's them themselves, the only way to solve that is to get rid of yourself. How the hell are you going to get rid of yourself, right?
True.
So how can you help people realize that it's a problem that a lot of people have been able to solve? And if we're patient enough, if you trust us enough, we can help you find that solution as well.
Excellent. Excellent. Very cool. I love that. You know, we kind of touched on the pandemic a little bit, but pandemic brought about a lot of significant changes in how people approach fitness. Some of them were actually in a very positive manner. So people that always felt that they did not have time to work out suddenly were in their homes nonstop. They weren't allowed to go to work and all those things. And they did embrace fitness. For some people, that isolation in home actually took them even further away from their fitness because they were used to going to the gym, to a CrossFit box, to wherever they were. How did your role adapt kind of during that time? And do you see any of these virtual remote fitness practices continuing in the future?
Ooh, I probably had the toughest time in as a lifetime team member. And the reason why is because my job as a leader is to hand off clients to all the personal trainers. That's what I thrive myself in currently right now. I love to help other trainers build their business, have them focus on their unique programs while I provide the skill set of sales. I was great at it until the pandemic happened, because what happened was it ruined a lot of people's business, but it also ruined a lot of leaders. And the reason why the leaders did not really have that many clients in the first place, that wasn't their job. But the clients that you actually handed off to all the trainers, when the pandemic happened, all of those clients ended up training with those trainers outside of the gym. And I hate to tell the truth. There was definitely a lot of trainers that were not only collecting unemployment, but they were also training all of their clients that they got
right
from not only Lifetime, right? But this is like trainers across like the board.
Yeah.
Right. But the leaders themselves, they did their job to get people clients. So for me, like I was hearing the fact that a lot of trainers were training their clients outside, everybody needs to eat. I get right. it. But I didn't really have like any clients at all. So I was the one that did my job, but I felt like I got the tough end of the stick.
Gotcha.
You know?
Gotcha.
So it made me very frustrated, you know, with where I was at in terms of my career. And then times that by the amount of hours that I spent on social media, seeing a lot of people continue their remote work in different industries, but I couldn't do anything.
Right.
It was very tough. So that was a part of my experience with COVID. Now I kind of forgot your second question. What was your second question?
So, you know, we also saw a lot of that virtual remote fitness practices.
Right.
You kind of see it continuing in the future.
Yep. Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Right. And the reason why it has to continue is because businesses have to prepare for any other sort of catastrophe that happens in our lives.
Right.
You know, like for Lifetime, you know, like we are very great with our real estate. You walk into Lifetime, it's beautiful. It is a yep. resort. It's the Disney version of fitness.
Yes.
But now what we're also trying to do is we are trying to get better at the digital app, make it easy, make it more efficient, and make it more engaging. The gotcha. Virtual is not going to go anywhere. But I guess the question is, how can both of it thrive together?
Agreed.
Right? And that's what the company's basically doing. If you can't come to the club because of a snow day, right? If you need to travel for work, there might be opportunities in the app where you can actually see your favorite instructor do a fitness class, and you can actually do that workout in the hotel fitness floor and so forth like that, right?
So you're actually providing for the word consistency.
Exactly. Yeah.
I love that. Exactly. I love that. Well, this has been an awesome conversation today. If I could, I'd love to ask two final questions.
Love it. Love it.
You know, throughout your experiences, and you kind of mentioned one before, so I'm curious if it's the same one, but
yeah.
throughout your experiences, have there been any specific books, podcasts, resources that have significantly impacted your personal growth and your mindset? And yeah. if so, would you share them with your audience?
Absolutely. Well, one side note, I am currently writing the book. So I will definitely,
excellent.
You know, it really is about the personal training industry, the okay. good, the bad, and the ugly, right? And it's basically going to be a book that I wish I read once I got out of college.
Excellent.
Right? It's just some life lessons that a lot of people don't realize. You actually learn a lot about yourself through your clients. So that's one thing, right?
Excellent.
But the book also has a lot of quotes from a lot of other books that I actually read, right? So going into the books, there's a book called How to Be a Badass by Jen Sincero.
Yep.
That's book read number it. One. And then that's another book would be like The Subtle Art of Not Giving a F.
Read that one too.
Yeah, right.
Absolutely.
Martin, right? Yep. And then there was like Changemaker by Dr. John Berardi, right? Yep. That was specifically for personal trainers. I probably should read a little bit more scientific books, but at the end of the day, like through 9, 10 years, or even like 12 years of being in this fitness industry, how do I be a better human?
Yes.
At the end of the day? How do I actually improve my empathy? How do I improve my drive? How do I actually better connect to not only my members, but my team members at the same time? So there's a lot of books with like Dale Carnegie, right? There's a lot of leadership books. And as a fitness professional, you are not only a coach, but you're also a leader. But everybody could technically be a leader, right, in their industry too. And more than ever, as you noticed, mental health, people need it the most.
Yes.
People need some type of person to pick them up.
Yes.
You know, whether it's a family member and so forth. So that's why the books that I've chosen were self-development books at the end of the day.
Excellent. Well, I'd love to invite you right now when you finish your book. I'd love to have you back on the podcast.
Oh, I love it, man. Thank you.
Put it out to the world. That would be fantastic. Perfect. Very cool. And finally, one last question.
Of course.
What message or mantra do you live by that you'd like to share with our listeners as a source of inspiration?
My mantra is love what you do, love who you do it with, and love what you leave behind.
Very cool. Very cool. Wise words of wisdom for anyone in any industry.
Yeah. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And the reason why I did that was love what you do, right? At the end of the day, you know, everybody has a mission. Everybody has a purpose. Just find some love in it and it's going to come back. And that's why in the service industry, it's so more impactful than ever that like if people see passion in what you do, you're going to get the type of connections and the business that you want, right? And love who you do it with. You're not going to be the only one that's going to be providing services, right?
Yes.
You're going to have a team to be working with, right? And when you, everybody's got to put their own individual ego aside and everybody's got to be focusing on a collective ego, right? The bigger the team that you have, the better the mission will be more likely to be accomplished, right? Mm-hmm. And I could go on with that, but love what you leave behind is probably one of those, you know, thought processes of just be proud of what you've done, you know? And
Absolutely.
If you're not proud with what you've done, then you definitely have to go back to figure out what your true purpose is and what your mission is at the end of the day.
Definitely. Love it. Love it. So let me ask for people to learn more about you and your programs. How do people find you?
Yep. So they can go on my Instagram, UFIT_DuncanCForbes, UFIT_DuncanCForbes. So like Forbes magazine.
Very cool. And for everyone listening, that is in the link for the podcast description. So you can follow Duncan there. Duncan, I really have enjoyed our conversation. This has been fascinating.
I really do appreciate it. Thank you very much.
I truly appreciate your time. And I look forward to talking to you again when the book comes out. So keep
Perfect.
Me in the loop.
Perfect. Absolutely, man. I appreciate it.
Duncan, thank you so much for your time. And I hope you have a great day.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Hey, everybody. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Don't miss this Thursday's episode. This is a big one with Amy Wilson. She is a board certified pharmacist, and we are going to dive into the world of Ozempic. So you're not going to want to miss it. Take care, everybody. Stay driven. And until next time.